This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The UK's digital tech scene is accelerating, and the proof is in the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. This year, we celebrate the next generation of pioneering startups that are shaping the tech landscape of tomorrow. The UK is a thriving ecosystem with access to global talent, cutting-edge research, and unparalleled investment opportunities. Your big idea belongs here. Visit great.gov.uk/UKPA to learn more.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
And this is Andrew Peach with World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Good to have your company. Coming up in the programme, reaction to Donald Trump's tariffs from a snack company in Brooklyn and a spice importer in Massachusetts, and how Mexico is threatening to sue Google if it won't change the Gulf of America back into the Gulf of Mexico. First, though, it was trailed as the big one a couple of hours ago in the Oval Office. The US President Donald Trump announced reciprocal tariffs on all US imports, saying our allies are worse than our enemies when it comes to trade. He also said he thought reciprocal tariffs was the most beautiful phrase. Many economists say the tariffs will just increase prices for US consumers. Here's how Mr. Trump responded to that.
Not necessarily, but I'll tell you what will go up is jobs. And ultimately, prices will stay the same, go down.
But if prices go up, Mr. President, yeah, because of these tariffs, who do you think voters should hold responsible?
Oh, I think what's going to go up is jobs are going to go up, and prices could go up somewhat short term, but prices will also go down. And I think the farmers are going to be helped by this very much, because product is being dumped into our country and our farmers are getting hurt very badly by the last administration. And again, if somebody wants to come in, including the car companies, if they want to come in and build car plants, they'll do it without tariffs, and therefore prices won't go up. There could be some short-term disturbance, but long-term, it's gonna make our country a fortune.
And here's what the president had to say about the European Union.
They have a 20% VAT tax, plus they charge lots of fees, and, you know, they're doing something else. European Union's been very tough on our companies. They sued Apple, they sued Google, they sued Facebook. So they've been very tough. Airlines have called me up and they said, could you help us with Europe because they're charging us so many different fees? I got a call from the head of American, United and other airlines saying every time we land a plane, we get just absolutely killed by the European Union. And so they haven't been treated as good. You know, we think European Union is wonderful. We all love Europe, but European Union has been absolutely brutal on trade.
Live to New York and our North America business correspondent, Ritika Gupta. I tried to pick a couple of little bits of what was an hour-long news conference there to give our listeners a flavour of what Donald Trump had to say. Give us a bit more of what stood out for you, Ritika.
Well, in the Oval Office, President Trump, you heard they're holding a news conference, and this is about the reciprocal tariffs on all countries that tax US goods. What we learned was that they'll be customized for each country. So these are going to be some difficult calculations here, but Trump saying that he wants to level the playing field. What is interesting, though, is that it's also going to include non-tariff barriers that countries are imposing. So he cited unfair subsidies, regulations, VAT, exchange rates, so other factors there that could limit U.S. trade. So again, that's going to make the calculations a whole lot tougher, but it's likely now that they will be delayed until, you know, at least April April the 1st. Previous reports were saying they could be enacted immediately. So it does give countries some time to react here. Potentially, maybe they'll be able to avert the tariffs. Again, there's been a lot of talk about Trump, the negotiator, and whether he'll follow through on these tariffs.
Okay. I mean, he spent a lot of time talking about what a simple principle this was, reciprocal tariffs. But as he went on to talk about basically having to have a different regime for every country in the world, depending on what charges they levied on the US, it sounds anything but simple.
Exactly. That's what I was just alluding to, is that it's going to be a difficult calculation because they're going to be customized for each country, and then also including non-tariff measures to that, which are like the subsidies, the VAT, the exchange rate. So there's a whole lot of factors there that are going to be need to consider, and that's why they're, you know, delaying it. His administration is going to have to put studies together to try and calculate to charge who what.
He's usually got it in for somebody at these events, and today he had it in for the European Union.
Yes, he really did single out the EU here, and he's said previously that the EU is the next in line for tariffs. He particularly singled out the 15% VAT as an example of what the US is looking to respond to, and he's, you know, previously called them out for not purchasing enough American cars or farm equipment. And I think you heard on the clip there, he's highlighted Europe targeting a lot of American tech firms. EU leaders, for their part, have vowed to retaliate if there's new US levies.
Riska, thank you very much indeed. Now, a whole host of guests to talk about this. Also in New York, Erin McLaughlin, senior economist at the Conference Board. Hi, Erin.
Hi there.
Got to George Conboy, chairman of Brighton Securities, with us. Hi, George.
Hello, Andrew.
And Dr. Margaret Barrow from the company It's Nola, which is a snack company in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
So let me start with you, Erin. We heard Donald Trump there making the economic case for tariffs, and his argument is if everyone either lowers their tariffs or starts producing their goods in the US, there's no need for prices for US consumers to rise. Can that be right?
Most economists and certainly the analysis that we've done at the Conference Board shows that that's probably not correct. You know, we are at a fairly low unemployment rate of 4%. And the U.S. is a consumer-based economy. More than two-thirds of our economy is based on consumer spending. So the consumption of American households does not necessarily equal the consumption of what is really over 200 nations that we trade with. And the kind of products that it makes sense to make in the U.S. with our relatively highly paid workforce is not necessarily equal to what we have experienced in a global economy.
The jobs point is interesting because he was obsessed with jobs in his remarks today about how many jobs in the U.S. this will create, jobs for everybody, et cetera, et cetera. You're saying there's no need for that.
The unemployment rate does not show that we have a need for jobs. I think being strategic when it comes to our trade, as we've seen in the last few years with wanting to reshore semiconductors and other sort of things critical to an economy, is one thing. But changing the conversation, having it be about all consumer goods and inputs into business manufacturing, certainly does change that conversation.
George Conboy, he talked a lot about chief executives calling him up, saying how much they loved it. Do they?
Well, I'm sure some do. There are an awful lot of chief executives out there, Andrew. I do think in this case, it's not going to be a binary situation where we have a whole bunch of tariffs or we have no tariffs. We'll probably have some tariffs on some trading partners or some goods. But a complex and dynamic economy as large as ours, a blunt instrument is neither likely to work nor be deployed. So at this point, the markets appear to be favorably viewing the idea that nothing's likely to happen before April, suggesting that it may be as much a bargaining chip as it is a blunt instrument.
And I wonder whether it's too soon to have this priced in yet, but do people really think that other countries are going to start changing their tariff and taxation regimes in response to avoid this? Because that's part of Trump's objective here.
Right, right. Some people do expect that. Some people expect that the benefit to their own economies, or some people expect that some smaller countries will make some changes to try to keep their sales to the U.S. intact. So there'll be some of almost everything, most likely, just because of the overall size of what we're talking about.
Dr. Margaret Barrow from It's Nola, snack company in Brooklyn, New York. I should say that your main import, as I understand it, is oats from Canada. How will you be affected by this, do you think? I think we may have lost our connection to Margaret. We'll come back to in a second or two. Erin McLaughlin, economist in New York. How can the Trump administration put all this into place with many fewer federal government staff than it's had until now? Because he's going around reducing those numbers.
That's a good question. My understanding, as your reporter was saying, that there is some conversation about it being analyzed until April 1st. And so if that is the case, perhaps there is some time for analysis. And I don't believe that the shedding of government staff has happened quite yet. But the sheer number of individual economies being over 200 certainly makes it a very large task. You know, I agree that this may in large part be a negotiation, an active negotiation, and that we may see more finer details play out as the weeks and the months sort of unroll here.
We've got Dr. Margaret Barrow now back in Brooklyn, New York. I was just saying to our listeners that you are importing oats from Canada. What's the impact of all this going to be on your business insofar as you can tell?
Well, if this goes through, then the impact is going to be that we'll have to pass on some of these increased costs to the consumer, to the customers. And not, it feels uncomfortable to do that, but in order for a sustained business, that's what we'll have to do. Many of our ingredients are coming from outside of the United States because the United States does not grow flaxseed or sunflower seed or chia seed or cashews or pumpkin seeds. And so we are forced to get these products outside of the United States. Passing on these tariff costs will then, once it increases the price, you know, I keep thinking to myself, how much are people willing to pay for granola? And so I've seen a few granola companies go out of business because of the last, the recession that we just went through because oats went up. And so we're really desperately trying to hold on here.
When you hear Donald Trump say there's no need for prices to go up, that's not what this is about. It's about other countries lowering their tariffs or other production companies moving production to the US. Is any of that helpful in terms of allaying the fears that you've just laid out for us?
No, because there's so much that's up in the air. If you're increasing tariffs across various countries and their various percentages, and if you're doing this for negotiation reasons, that's one thing. But how do we know? There's no guarantee that these prices aren't going to go up, that these tariffs aren't going to go through. So for us and a lot of businesses, I think what it does is it breeds a lot of anxiety.
So you're in a situation where a lot of people voted for Donald Trump because they were unhappy with the cost of goods in the shops and in with businesses like yours, and that's now getting worse.
It is getting worse. And so I don't know, will we have more buyer's remorse?
Erin, is Margaret's assessment of the situation her own business is in, is that reasonable? Is she on the money, do you think?
It is reasonable. So we did a calculation last week, which hopefully is still sort of current. And we ran a scenario where if there were tariffs of 25% on Canada, 25% on Mexico, and 10% on China, and the China one has stuck, what would be the result for U.S. consumers and businesses? So over the course of 1 year, we would see a rise of 0.6% in inflation. And we would also see almost a 1%, a 0.9 cut to our U.S. GDP. It also weakens all of the other economies as well. So big blanket tariffs like that, 25, 25, 10 on, and of course, those are our three largest trading partners, China, Canada, and Mexico, certainly have an impact.
Let me ask you this, Margaret, running a business. Do you think Donald Trump's on your side? Because he definitely thinks he's on your side. Do you think he is?
To be honest, it doesn't feel like it. Not at this time. It doesn't feel like it.
And George, bring you in on this. Whose side then is Donald Trump on? Because he clearly, the economy and trade and business is the most important thing to him. He clearly passionately believes in what he's doing.
Right, right. He may be reacting in some way to what we saw from some of the NAFTA rules that went into place back in the 90s. Certainly in upstate New York, we saw the whole region find its industry sort of drop away as some of those jobs were exported to Mexico, to China, wherever it might be. Economically, that was the logical result of what we did. And those people are not now unemployed, but average wages in the region are down considerably. The work is just not the same. The manufacturing jobs aren't as good. So while his intent may be good, it remains to be seen how much overall good will be done. But I think the dire predictions are a little premature. The earliest negative I'm seeing, however, whether it's for Margaret's business or others like it, is the uncertainty that's in the air. It's hard enough to run a business without meaningful uncertainty added to what you already have on hand.
And Margaret, what are you actually able to do right now in your business to deal with some of the issues that you've laid out for us? You've talked about the fears that you have. How are you behaving differently now?
Well, I have new customers calling and wanting to know if we can bring down our prices. And I've had to say that we can't work with them if we have to bring down our prices, because right now we don't know if we're going to have to raise our prices. So it doesn't feel good to be in a spot where you can't take in new customers at this time when we actually need them.
Thank you so much to the three of you for being part of this conversation. Eric McLaughlin, Senior Economist at the Conference Board in New York, George Conboy from Brighton Securities, and Margaret Barrow, Chief Executive and Founder of It's Nolus, that company in New York. Now, let's focus on India. Its Prime Minister Narendra Modi is at the White House right now for talks with Donald Trump. They're going to focus on trade as well as immigration and defence. Here's what President Trump had to say about India a little earlier.
Traditionally, India is right at the top of the pack, pretty much. There are a couple of smaller countries that are actually more. But India is a very, very, they charge tremendous tariffs. I remember when Harley Davidson couldn't sell their motorbikes into India because of the fact that India, the tax was so high, the tariff was so high. And Harley was forced to build, I guess they built, I don't know, that was a while ago, but I think they built a factory in India in order to avoid paying the tariffs.
Live to Massachusetts and Claire Cheney, who is the founder of Curio Spice importing business. Claire, thank you for being with us. Tell me about what products you import from India.
Yes. Hi, Andrew. We import turmeric and ginger from India.
And what is your expectation of what will happen now when Donald Trump's talking about reciprocal tariffs?
Well, we're keeping a close eye on it. I think we've already been fielding a lot of questions from our suppliers all over the world about, you know, export to the U.S. and what's going to change. I think specifically with this Indian supply relationship, we are concerned that we will have to order less turmeric and find some from other countries. But these are relationships that we've built with these suppliers over many, many years. And, you know, it's creating a lot of confusion and concern, threatening to impact these supply chains and directly the smallholder farmers, many of whom are women and are already facing challenges of gender inequity.
So it's so interesting, this. Trump says his objective here is to get India to change its tariff regime on goods from the US. So therefore, that the high tariffs that you're worrying about don't need to happen. That's very much not how you're viewing it, and it doesn't sound like how your customers and the other people you're dealing with are viewing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's confusing. I think the reciprocal tariffs you know, isn't well understood by either the consumer or the suppliers, frankly. And I'm not sure that the press conference today, you know, shed much light on how, you know, how this is going to work and whether it will be in favor or not for, for either country.
I mean, Trump's a disruptor. I guess that's why people have elected him. And so what he's doing here is trying to kind of, you know, smash up the status quo, isn't he? He's trying to get rid of the existing arrangements on both sides and hoping for something more favorable to the US. It's the more short-term impact of that that's worrying you, you know, but what will it do to my prices? Right. What will it do to my business in the immediate term?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the similar to the oats and the granola ingredients, you know, there are not a lot of spices that grow in the United States. There are some, and we work with a lot of cool suppliers here in the U.S., but you know, India is a huge exporter of turmeric and we buy organic turmeric. So already the price is quite high for the premium quality product. And, you know, how much can the consumer absorb as far as these, you know, we're hoping not to change our prices, frankly, and kind of ride it out depending on what happens. But we're keeping a close eye on things.
Right. I forgive my naivety here. Could you grow turmeric in the US? Because again, that's part of what he's after, isn't it?
Oh gosh, you know it. Yes, I've grown it in a pot on my windowsill, but and it grows in very hot places like Hawaii, and a little bit in Florida. But to do it at scale, at the level that, you know, people have been growing turmeric in India for 6,000 years, they know what's up. So I don't think that's going to work out here in the US.
Right. And in terms of having to put your prices up, it's the last thing any business owner wants to do. I guess you don't really know how many of your customers stay with you at higher prices and how many think we can't afford that until you do it.
Yeah, it's true. And fortunately, people come to Curio Spice because they know we're working on behalf of the small farmers and we're trying to honor their work. And so hopefully they'll understand that we're continuing to try and support them despite what's going on in the economy.
And I was interested just finally to hear you say there wasn't enough detail. I mean, Trump spoke for an hour. Some of it's repetitive, some of it was about other issues. Mm-hmm. Do you think the detail ever comes about exactly how this regime is going to be operated to give you and other businesses a chance to think, so how does that impact us? How do we navigate our way through this situation?
I don't see evidence of that being the case.
So in other words, it's all talk?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're right in saying he's trying to shake things up and be a disruptor. But it is definitely confusing. And I think there's clearly a lot of chaos as a result of many of these changes. And it's not clear how to navigate.
It plays out. Interesting. Claire, thank you. Claire Cheney from Curio Spice in Massachusetts. There's a load of content about this for you on our website at bbc.com/business. If you'd like to know what we know about how the tariff regime is going to work, then check out all the articles we have there for you. Let's go to Mexico now, threatening to sue Google if the company won't change the name of the Gulf of America back to the Gulf of Mexico for maps users in the US. President Claudia Sheinbaum has urged the firm to reconsider its decision to reflect President Trump's executive order on the matter. Here she is making that announcement.
Google is wrong. They responded to our letters and the foreign minister answered no, that they are wrong, that you cannot call the entire Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. The decree was given again and they were told what the international norms are. So if they keep insisting, we are also considering a lawsuit.
We spotted that Google Maps has stopped people from reviewing the Gulf. Mexican journalist Gabriela Morales Casas joins me now live on World Business Report. Give me a bit more on this then. But I tell you what I want to know first. What are people in Mexico saying about this? Do they care?
Hello, Andrew.
Hi.
Well, I have to be honest. We Mexicans are very fond of our patriotic symbols. being the flag, the national anthem, the Virgin of Guadalupe or the tequila itself. So yes, and since President Trump has been very anti-Mexican and his stance are threatening to us, now we are a drug country, terrorist country, illegal immigration country, a Chinese-like country. People, yes, it is upset about that, but it's not that important. I think what we've seen here as journalists with people is just a nuisance. And President Sheinbaum knows this, but she wants to have a little win to uplift the morals, because yes, the Gulf of Mexico is not a cultural patrimony. It's nothing, it's not like the Day of the Dead or the tequila itself, which it's very protected, for instance. But it's just a little game, a little hand she can win in the middle of all these threats and menaces.
Yes, backdrop of Trump being pretty down on Mexico, I see that. Whether it's going to be a little win, I'm not sure whether she's going to win. But it's an easy kind of it's an easy drum to bang, isn't it? To say I'm fighting up for the country here. Let's keep the Gulf of Mexico. I suppose it's not going to go down badly with people there.
Yes, because I mean it could be a little win, but it will not proceed legally because. Like I said, it's not like the indigenous embroidery or something we can protect. It's not a patrimony. I mean, it is a name that was given a long time ago, more than 100 years ago, and it's recognized by the United Nations. But that does not mean that it's not Mexican. I mean, it's just a name. And he can call whatever he wants the Gulf of Mexico. He can say Gulf of America. What she's arguing with Google is the fact that if you are outside the states, you are not allowed to, or you can choose the way to call it, but that is not like the Falklands and the Maldives. I mean, the Falklands Islands are from the United Kingdom, even though Argentinians say, oh, they are the Maldives because it's our territory. Well, it's not. The Gulf of Mexico is no man's land. We're talking about United States, Mexico, and some countries in the Caribbean. So it's nobody's. We can call it whatever we want in Mexico, the States, or the Caribbean islands, or the Bermuda Triangle if we want to. I mean,
yeah. And it's not that just important. Going back to where you started, that you know, people think Trump's always got something to say about Mexico. Is everyone worried about that? Are people sort of behaving differently or fearful of what that might mean?
The fear. I think what we are scared of, and I include myself, is about Mexico being targeted as a terrorist country, that we have terrorist organizations, because that can be can roll out some kind of invasion in the north of Mexico, where the narco cartels and the capos are.
I've got to stop you there, Gabriela, but thank you so much for that. I very much appreciate you joining me. That's Gabriela Morales Casas from Mexico. This was World Business Report with me, Andrew Peach. Thanks for being with us on the BBC World Service.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade. Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. The winner of the Connected and Automated Mobility Technology category was Batobo. Hear from the co-founder, Sanjay Gulgan.
The main idea in the warehouses to move your products as quickly as possible and accurately. We are trying to optimize the operations. Robots actually walking around the warehouses. They can run 3 shifts, so they can run 24/7. And also we have a chance to meet the demand for the rapid growth in trading. I'm excited to grow the Botobo in the UK. We can access any institutions and technical resources. We can apply more patents here, which is very critical for the valuation, for the future existence. It's easy to expand your business here and set up a company here. So this is a very big advantage. This is a very good opportunity in the UK. Whatever you touch, you see some opportunity and benefits here.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.